Welcome to Dime Library, with tales of Western border romance, high seas adventure, lost treasure, suspense, and more. On today's episode, the thrilling conclusion of the story, Texas Jack, the Prairie Rattler, or the Queen of the Wild Riders, a romance in the life of a real hero, John B. Omohundro, Texas Jack, and a tale of the Southwest border, by Honorable William F. Cody, Buffalo Bill, author of The Gold Bullet Sport, Kansas King, Deadly Eye, The Phantom Spy, etc., etc. Chapter 46, Camila. I will now return to the strange girl, the double of Senorita Rena Rivera, who called herself by the simple name of Camila. After her saving Texas Jack and the Tonkaway, as she did, she departed alone on her way, as the reader will remember, and with the air of one who had a certain destination in view and knew how to reach it. Her white horse seemed fully as equal to the task of carrying her as she was of riding, although both had had such a fearful experience together when chased by Iron Arm, the renegade chief, whom the reader now knows in all of the wickedness of his career. At last, as she rode along, the prairies began to wear a changed look, being no longer green and full of beauty. The land had a barren aspect, and before her it seemed to grow more and more into a desolate waste. But she did not hesitate, holding her course toward a small growth of sickly-looking trees. Into these she rode and halted for rest and water at a small pool. A stay of half an hour in the dreary place, and then she boldly headed her horse directly into the desolation of the staked plain. The noble white showed no tardiness about going, and did not hang back as did many horses who knew by instinct what was before them. Riding without any apparent guiding marks, yet the maiden seemed to change her course from time to time with strange regularity, turning here and there at right angles, until her trail had been mapped out, it would have presented the appearance of the line of a pair of stairs. For several hours she rode into the desert, following this zigzag course, and then before her loomed up a pile of what appeared to be stones. But upon approaching nearer to it, all its ghastliness stood out in bold relief, for it was but a monument of bones, human and brute alike. There were human skulls here and there, and one, with all its grinning white teeth, surmounted the top of the bone monument, which was about 10 feet in height. Then there were the heads and bones of cattle, of deer, of horses, wolves, and coyotes, until a dozen different species of the animal kind aided humanity in the weird monument. Reaching this ghastly pile, and with only a cursory glance at it, the maiden held on her way in a straight line directly into the desert. As the bone monument was almost out of sight behind her, there came before her vision a wrecked wagon, which had evidently been there for years. And, as this also disappeared from her view, as she looked over her shoulder, a scrub tree, with no life in it, was visible standing straight in her course. By this also the maiden rode, going deeper and deeper into the desert, though she began to feel the heat, as did also the panting horse. Without apparent dread, she held on, and if she had any objects to guide her further, they certainly would not have been visible to the eye of any companion who might have been with her. Now she no longer went on a zigzag course, but kept to a beeline deeper into the staked plain. Wholly unmindful, it seemed, that she had left many miles behind her, and passed a monument of bones of men and animals that it had proven fatal to. At last, as the sun neared its setting, there appeared before her a lot of sandhills, higher than those that had before met her view. As she drew nearer to them, their appearance seemed to present a strange regularity, and there seemed to be a ridge of them extending for half a mile. Suddenly, over the summit of one of the sandhills dashed a horseman, then another, and another, until a dozen men were riding toward her at lightning speed. But she did not bring her horse to a halt, nor show the slightest sign of fear, but rode directly on toward the coming horsemen, who were waving their broad sombreros and shouting like Indians. As they drew nearer, it could be seen that their faces were darkly bronzed, their dress was of buckskin, and they wore white sombreros, while they were splendidly mounted, their horse being equipped with superb saddles and bridles, and one and all of the riders were armed to the teeth. In advance upon a horse as black as ebony rode a young man with a dark face that was womanly in the beauty of its features, and yet full of stern resolve and reckless courage. He was attired in a better costume than the others, wearing his leggings and handsome top boots, gold spurs, and a white plush Mexican jacket over a silk shirt. Upon his head was a white sombrero, embroidered in gold thread. About his sash was a red silk scarf, half hiding a belt of arms, and his saddle, bridle, and weapons were all gold-mounted and of exquisite workmanship. Like the very wind, his noble black carried him over the desert, while he sat in the saddle as though hardly conscious of any motion. Before reaching the maiden, he took off his broad white sombrero, and waving it around his head, shouted in tones that rung like bugle notes, "Bravo! Camilla! Back to our desert island! I welcome you!" The next instant he wheeled his horse alongside of her, and drawing her toward him, kissed her affectionately, while he said, "Thank heaven you are home again, Camilla, for I was just about to start out to find you, or to wreak a fearful revenge on those who had harmed you. But come, you look pale and ill, and need rest." The next instant the flying horsemen circled around her with welcoming cries, and the whole party rode on together toward the sandhills, upon which other forms were now visible, waving their hats in welcome and joy at the return of the wanderer. Chapter 47. The Wild Riders. Anyone approaching the sandhills with Camilla and her escort of dashing horsemen would have at once solved the secret of the Wild Riders being able to penetrate the staked plain beyond all fear of pursuit. The sandhills were a natural formation. That is, for centuries the winds had added drifts to them and made them almost in the form of a circle, some half mile in diameter, with the interior hollow. Here, at some time long years before, had been a motte, or timber island, but the trees were stunted in their growth by the soil and the heat. Around this clump of timber, the winds had drifted the sand, forming a grand circular fortress. Within this bowl, with its wall of sand, the Wild Riders had found a safe retreat, and diligently had they worked to improve it. Wells had been dug here and there, and the deeper soil placed as a topsoil upon the sand. Rich loam had been hauled by wagons from a long way off and placed here and there where most needed, while trees, grass, and even vegetables had been cultivated. There was stabling, a species of dugout in the sand, for 100 horses. Stacks of hay gathered around about the prairies and brought on the backs of ponies to the retreat, while the grazing ground was amply sufficient for ordinary uses. In the timber, sheltered by the dwarf trees, were a dozen tents in a row, and off to one side were three others, two of them larger and better than the others. To one passing on the plains within a few 100 feet, he would have seen only a ridge of sandhills, which he cared little to toil over, little dreaming that a camp was within. But few ever dared penetrate the desert this far, and hence the Wild Riders were safe in their retreat. Toward the three tents, standing by themselves, the young leader of the Wild Riders, for such was the personage who had so warmly welcomed Camilla, led the way. Arriving there, he aided her to dismount and conducted her to one of the larger tents, saying, "Camilla, I am so happy in seeing you once more in our old home, so rest yourself, and Nana will soon have something prepared for you to eat." The one spoken of as Nana then appeared, coming out of one of the smaller tents between the two larger ones. She was a handsome peon girl, and warmly greeted Camilla, who was her mistress, speaking in a Spanish patois. Retiring to her tent, accompanied by Nana, Camilla threw herself down upon a cot, for she seemed very tired, while the peon girl laid out for her other clothing and got water from the spring for her bath. In the meantime, the news of the maiden's return had spread through the camp, which numbered some 40 men, all of them dark-faced Mexicans, with a bold and reckless air. Together they stood in groups, discussing the return of the young queen of the Wild Riders, whom they had given up as lost, and wholly in the dark as to what had happened to her, or where she had been. After a while, Camilla came from her tent, looking refreshed, and she was met by Don Rivas, the captain of the Wild Riders, who led her to the awning beneath which they ate their meals. They chatted away pleasantly together while discussing the food, and afterwards took seats in easy chairs before the tent of the young chief. "Now, Camilla, I'm anxious to have you tell me of your adventures, for I'm dying of curiosity to know how it is that you most mysteriously disappeared one day, and then returned after some days' absence while I was away to again almost immediately depart upon another mysterious jaunt." "Rinaldo, since I last saw you, I have been more than twice nearer death than I supposed it possible for me to be and yet live," said Camilla, quietly, while a look of alarm came over the face of the chief as he said quickly, "Oh, my poor girl, tell me about it." "You know that upon your last raid, as you wished to make a visit to the lower settlements, you asked me if I could return to the desert island alone." "Yes, I remember, and you started alone, greatly to my regret afterward." "I was surprised and captured by a band of Comanches who carried me to their chief in the mountains, and he was none other than Iron Arm, the renegade."
"That hound!"
"Yes, but it seems he had sent his warriors to capture another one, and he believed me to be that one. but I will tell you all as it occurred." And Camilla told the story of how she had believed Iron Arm to be mad and had fled from him, and her rescue at the cliff by Texas Jack. "That splendid fellow saved you then?" "Yes, he and his Indian friend, a Tonkaway." "I shall not forget the debt I owe them, Camilla, but pray go on with your story." Then Camilla told of her recapture with Texas Jack, their rescue by the Tonkaway, and her being carried to the hacienda of Don Castro Rivera as his daughter. Situated as she was, the Queen of the Wild Riders, she dared not tell who she was, and so she made her escape at night and returned to her desert island to find Don Ronaldo away with half of his men. While riding on the plane a day or two after, she had come upon Texas Jack and the Tonkaway and had saved them from dying there, while she, on her return to the retreat, was set upon by a band of man-tigers and captured. Her second rescue by Texas Jack and the Tonkaway she made known, and how once again, when unconscious, she had been taken to the hacienda of the Don as Rena Rivera. Again she had made her escape, and what followed on her trip to the plain she also made known. "Now, Ronaldo, you know all, and I will hear the story which you have to tell," she said. "My poor child, through what you have not passed, I owe it to the gallant prairie rattler that you are not dead." "Yes, I have a story to tell, and it is one that hinges strangely upon your own, for I discovered, upon my return to the retreat, a band of man-tigers with a captive. That captive I saw and believed to be you, so I made a desperate charge upon them and rescued the one I thought was yourself. I had no time to tarry, and dashed along at full speed until we were near the desert, and then I discovered my mistake. But I brought her on here for safety, as I had too few men with me, and she became my guest for a few days, until able to stay in the ride home, occupying your tent. That lady was the Dona Rena Rivera, and Camilla, she is the living image of yourself, as you must know, having seen her. I asked her not to divulge the secret she had discovered regarding me, and she pledged her word that she would not. Nor would she tell me even, Ronaldo, though she certainly knew who I was. Yes, for I spoke to her of you, and, sister mine, as I love you so much, I found not one of my sister who was your image, and my whole heart went out to her, and I confessed my idolatry for her. And her answer, brother? She bade me hope. The Virgin be praised, my brother, for Reina Rivera is an angel on earth, was the earnest response of the Wild Rider's sister. Chapter 48. The Compact. When Texas Jack heard the ringing, musical voice, as he stood at bay upon the staked plain, he turned his bedimmed eyes upon the one who had called out to him, and beheld none other than Camilla, the Queen of the Wild Riders. "She still lives," he muttered, as she came toward him, and halted, crying, "Well, Señor Rattler, you are again tempting and daring the dangers of the staked plain, I see." "I am, Señorita, but it is from no desire of mine on this occasion, for I was driven hither by the tigers, from whom I escaped, and my poor friend, the Tonkaway, lies buried on the plains, for he had to succumb to the heat." "The Tonkaway is dead?" "Yes, Señorita." "Poor fellow. My men shall bury him, and I have done that last service for him, Señorita." "Come, Señor. It is cruel of me to stand here and talk to you while you suffer. Here, take a draught of my water from my canteen, and mount one of my men's horses, for he can follow slowly on his own. Aid him there. For do you not see that he is too weak to mount by himself?" called out Camilo Rivas, and two of the Wild Riders sprung to his side. "Now, Señor, we will push on as rapidly as you dare go, for you need attention, I plainly see." And riding by his side, Camilla set out at a pace of a gallop, followed by her band of Wild Riders, while one of the men followed more slowly with Yellow Chief, who had also been refreshed by the contents of a canteen, which every rider carried for his horses as well as for himself. Strengthened by the draught of water, and cooled by the rapid motion, Texas Jack felt more like himself, and gazed with amazement upon the desert island, as the riders called their camp, when he rode into it. Straight up to her brother's tent rode Camilla, accompanied by Jack, and Don Ronaldo gazed at them with surprise as they rode up. "Brother, this is Señor Texas Jack, the one whom saved my life more than once, and whom I found almost dying upon the plain in my gallop a while ago. Señor Jack, this is my brother, Don Ronaldo Rivas, captain of the Wild Riders of the Staked Plain." Jack was almost struck dumb at what he saw and heard, but the young chief stepped to his side and grasped his head warmly. "I am most happy to meet a gentleman of whom I have heard so much. Dismount, Señor, and accept of what hospitalities a humble camp can offer you." Jack returned the grasp of the hand and responded, "I'm happy to meet you, Senior Captain, of whom I have heard much that I now, seeing you, believe to have been untrue." "Thanks for those words, Senior, but you look ill, and we must nurse you back to your former gallant self." The chief gave Texas Jack a cot in his own tent, and after he had partaken of rest and food, he did indeed feed himself again, though he felt sad at the fate of the poor Tonkaway. That evening, when they were seated, the chief, Camilla, and their guest, before the tent of the young captain, Jack told of his capture by the tigers and of the discovery he had made of their plans. Instantly, Don Ronaldo sprung to his feet while he cried, "They intend to carry out this plot against Don Rivera and his beautiful daughter, do they?" "Yes, Senor, if I cannot prevent it." "But you can, for you shall lead the Wild Riders to the rescue." "Bravo, Senor Capitan, bravo. Now we will clip the tiger's claws," said Jack, with delight. The young captain paced to and fro for a moment in silence, and then halting in front of his guest, he said in a low and distinct voice, "Senor Jack, you have doubtless heard hard things said against the Wild Riders of the Staked Plain." "I have, Senor, I'm sorry to say." "You have heard it said of them that we raided the settlements, killed, pillaged, ran off stock, and other terrible things." "Yes, Senor." "Now you have been over the Texas prairies, from the Rio Grande to the Bravos, and from the Indian Territory to New Mexico."
"I have, Captain."
"Have you ever yourself seen a Wild Rider do the deeds of which we are accused?"
"I have not, sir."
"Nor anyone else, for we are not robbers, Senor Jack, but I will tell you just what we are. A glance is sufficient to show that we are Mexicans, and I am the only one of the band that is not wholly so. But my mother was an American lady, whom my father met while traveling in the States and married. I am an officer in the Mexican Army, and was detailed for secret service. That secret service was to hunt out in Texas, where they had settled, all of the conspirators against our government, who keep our country in a constant state of ferment. There were just 60 of my list to be hunted down, and 59 of that number I have either executed or sent to Mexico as prisoners. I sought this plain as a retreat, and you see we have a safe one. Under our name, the Tigers, the outlaws of the Chaparral have committed many deeds of outlawry, but we have done no act of wrong against Texas or Texan, our only illegal deed being in hunting down Mexican conspirators within the borders of a foreign government. The 60th man on my list you named a while ago. He is an American, but has long since lived in Mexico and been a disturbing element. I refer to John Melton, the king of the Man-Tigers, and known beyond the Rio Grande as Juan Meltos. There was one other whom I had to watch, but investigation has satisfied the government that he was not guilty of the charges against him, and the ban of exile upon him has been removed. That man is known here as Don Castro Rivera, but his real name is Don Valdez Gomez. Now, Senor Jack, with the capture of the Tiger King, my duties will be ended, and I return to Mexico. So gladly will I aid you in capturing the band of man-tigers the night that they have set for the robbery of Don Rivera's hacienda, and the marriage of the Dona Reina to that villain Iron Arm, the renegade. So lay your plans of action, Senor, and command me and my Wild Riders to aid you." Chapter 49. Texas Jack's Plot. True to his word, Mr. Mark Melton returned to the hacienda of Don Rivera, and was delighted to find that nothing had turned up of an unpleasant nature to mar the intended marriage. The Don greeted him almost cordially, and Dona Reina was by no means cold in her manner toward him. Mr. Melton was not alone, however, for he presented as his friend Captain Elberon, an American Army officer who had been his boyhood friend, and learning of his intention to get married, and was to depart through dangerous country with his bride, had offered the services of himself and 24 soldiers as an escort. The Don thanked the good-looking captain, assigned the soldiers to quarters in one wing of the hacienda, where they would be shown every attention, and as they were supplied with all they could eat and drink, the rather hard-looking set of Uncle Sam's warriors seemed happy. The following evening was to be the one upon which the wedding was to take place, and all the preparations were upon a grand scale. A dark-faced, stern-looking priest had been sent for, and when the hour approached for the ceremony, he took his stand at the library. And the bride and groom stepped up before him, Reina dressed elegantly, yet looking very pale and seemingly nervous. "Is all ready?" asked the priest. "Yes, Holy Padre," cried Don Rivera, in a loud voice, and he continued in the same high key, "Let the servants of the hacienda enter to witness the ceremony."
There was a slight pause, and then, through two doors, there entered a party of men in buckskin, with revolvers in their hand. At the head of one party was Texas Jack, and leading the other was Don Reynaldo Rivas, the captain of the Wild Riders. "Iron Arm, the renegade, you are my prisoner." "Move and you're a dead man," cried Texas Jack, springing to the side of Mark Melton and covering him with his revolver. "Juan Meltos, the conspirator, you are a prisoner of Mexico. Surrender or die." And Don Rivas was before the pretended Captain Elberon, his revolver pressed on his heart. Neither of the two outlaw brothers dared move, but the Tiger King shouted in a stentorian voice, "Ho, tigers, to the rescue! You call in vain, Captain Elberon, for your pretended soldiers are everyone in irons, and those who are Mexicans will accompany you to Mexico under the escort of the Wild Riders, where your evil careers will be brought to a just end. As for you, Iron Arm, I will care for you and the two Americans in the Tiger Band by hanging you for your crimes." And Texas Jack motioned to a Wild Rider, who quickly stepped forward and slipped irons on the wrists of the renegade chief. The Tiger King was also ironed, and then the two were led out of the library and placed with their outlaw allies, who were a sorry-looking set of villains at the way in which their intended raid of the hacienda had ended. Freed of their unwelcome visitors, Don Rivera and his guests passed a pleasant evening together, and many laughed over the mistakes that were made in taking Rina Rivera for Camila Rivas, and vice versa, for the young hostess had insisted that they should dress exactly alike on the occasion. As for Texas Jack, he was perfectly delighted at the success of his plot, which had been to smuggle the Wild Riders into the hacienda before the arrival of Mark Melton and his tiger allies. But the Texan often muttered to himself, "Poor Tonkaway, I wish you still lived to enjoy the triumph." Chapter 50. Conclusion. When Don Rivera heard from the lips of Captain Rivas that the ban of exile was removed and he had been found not guilty by his government of the charges against him, he was a happy man, for he knew that he could live in peace. But he told the young captain that he would not return to Mexico to live, as he loved Texas and the Americans and would still dwell in his hacienda. This idea seemed to please Captain Rivas, who said that he was half an American himself and would gladly become a whole one if the Dona Reina would promise to be his wife. This promise Reina gave, and preparations were made for the Wild Riders to depart with their prisoners for Mexico, Texas Jack having already taken his, with an escort of cowboys, to deliver over the commandment of the nearest army post. "Will you leave your sister with us, Captain?" said the Don to the young Wild Rider chief. "With pleasure, Don Rivera, and let me tell you a secret about Camila. She is not really my sister."
"Indeed?"
"No, sir, and can I tell you more? You were forced to leave Mexico just at the time your wife gave birth to a little daughter, as you supposed. Your wife died, and neither she nor yourself knew that there were two children born, little twin sisters, for the nurse, having no child of her own, quietly stole one to adopt and bring up. That nurse afterward came to our family to live, and brought her supposed child with her. She died in our service, and confessed to my mother what she had done, and thus Camila was reared as my sister. Now that you are no longer in exile, I'll tell you the secret of the startling resemblance between Camila and the Dona Reina, for they are indeed twin sisters. As my mother was dead, Camila insisted on coming with me, upon my secret service into Texas, for she has never known that she was not in reality my own sister, and she is the affianced of a young American soldier, a cousin to my mother, and he is now ordered to the Texas border, I see, with his company." It was with feelings of the deepest pleasure that Don Rivera heard the story that told to him by the young Mexican captain, and sending for Reina and Camila, he made the secret known to them, seemingly to their great joy. That night, the Wild Riders and their captives started for the Rio Grande, Texas Jack arriving just in time to accompany them at the urgent request of Don Rivera, and having to report that Iron Arm and the other prisoners he had in charge had been made short work of by the commandant of the fort. Jack was accompanied by Ebony, his negro majordomo, for the ranchero had returned by the ranch and taken with him his companion, telling him that he would have to take the place of Red Snake the Tonkaway. "Me do my best, Massa Jack, but me no scalp folkses, 'cause the Bible says that ain't right," responded Ebony, but he was glad to get away from his lonely life at the ranch, where he slept all day and watched all night. After an absence of 2 months, Don Rivera and Texas Jack returned, the latter accompanied by Ebony and the former by a peon slave. They received a warm welcome from the Hacienda household, and the next day Jack undertook to go to the fort and guide back Captain Vincent, the lover of Camilla. In due time he returned with a young officer, and some weeks after there was a grand double wedding at the Hacienda, for Rina Rivera became the Señora Rivas, and Camilla, her twin sister, took the name of Mrs. Henry Vincent, while, in spite of the numerous American officers and Mexican dignitaries present, the most honored guest of the occasion was Texas Jack, the Prairie Rattler. The end.